Welcome to yet another BYU Sports Nation Deep Blue Special. I'm your host, Spencer Linton. Great to have you with us in Studio B. Over the next hour, we will introduce you to, and in some instances, reintroduce you to, unforgettable, powerful, and impactful stories. Over the last few years, BYU TV has explored, discovered, and produced these inspiring and unique narratives, often featuring BYU athletes and coaches. These stories are at the very heart of this Deep Blue series. Today, we will focus on some transcendent men and their stories of faith, perseverance, strength, and love. Six exceptional men specifically, each one with their own powerful story to tell. Richie Saunders, also known as the Tater Tot King, will tip things off today as he shares his unique story, starting from childhood, attending BYU basketball games with his grandpa, and how those moments sparked his dream to one day play for BYU himself. This is Deep Blue with the King, Richie Saunders.
Sitting at the top of the stands with my grandpa, I remember he had his binoculars, his headset in, locked into the game. I really remember being right up against the top wall. When I was young up here, it really meant so much. It was such an emotional thing. It was like, it was more than just, oh, that game's over. Like you would carry it with you, right? Like I can remember, I was at my grandparents' house and watching a game. We lost, BYU lost, and I was so frustrated. I remember taking off my BYU shirt and walking home and just in tears of just, why did they have to lose, you know? Like something about that had to stir me in the direction of playing here.
I would teach him to visualize who you want to play for and practice to be good enough to play for that. And that's how we kind of got it started. And I remember there was one time when I was helping him to visualize, he said, I want to play for BYU. And knowing how nearly impossible it is to become a Division I elite athlete, we set up expectations. If he wanted to do it, it would require more work than he's ever imagined putting into it. And if you're willing to pay the price, you might have a chance. And so he did. He went for it.
Me and my dad, every morning, 5 a.m., we'd be in the gym, in the church gym, shooting and practicing. That was like our little time together. He was very busy growing up, but that was one thing he made time for. And it was time where we were able to connect daily and just grow as a person and as a basketball player.
That's better. It's a million times better.
There were many times when he would be in tears. Like, literally, I can picture him just sobbing, not wanting to take another shot because he can't figure out how to make a basket.
I can remember him looking at me and just, you know, kindly but strongly telling me, get up and keep shooting. There was those times, those decision points constantly growing up where I had to decide if this really was what I wanted to do. I wanted it to be true that I could play here, but I didn't know if that was true. I didn't know if that was even a possibility. But, you know, we just kept working. Me and my dad, me and my mom, and we just kept chipping away at it.
One of the concerns that we had as he was starting to excel was, how do you establish an internal value system that you adhere to? And so that's where we created what we called a creed.
The creed was just who I was and who I was gonna be no matter what happened. You know, I'm not perfect at that at all, but it's who I want to be.
The first one is take the time and energy to elevate the one in the moment. No matter what I accomplish on or off the court, always remember I am no more important than others. No one will question my commitment to the team and to the game. Trust in the 5 a.m.s. It is who I am, so be me.
Be relentless in my work ethic. Find the joy in the now. Serve at every possible opportunity. Take the time to connect with God daily. And protect the family name.
He anticipated he would be successful. He wanted to be successful. And I think because of absorbing these into his character, they literally shaped the evolution of who he has become.
this past spring changing coaches here. And, you know, like that left me and Sierra in like a spot of like such uncertainty. Are we going to stay here at BYU? Are we going to go somewhere else? You know, like it like brought us together like nothing else. You know, like during that really hard period, we just had to rely so much on each other and so much on God to figure it out.
It really showed me a lot about Richie and his desire to, obviously we had choice and we have our agency, but we wanted to do what we felt like God wanted us to do.
Making that decision, it wasn't some miraculous, like huge light that came to us, right? Like it was just the smallest of nudges. We were sitting in a taxi in Guatemala when I just felt this little nudge. And I turned to Sierra and explained that, like, I feel like I need to be here. And she turned and said the same thing.
Now that we are here and that we followed that small, quiet prompting, we really feel like we're supposed to be here, and we're so happy with the program and the coaches and what Coach Young is doing. And we really see how God played a part in helping us make that decision.
I play hard out there, right? And every day, every game, I'm praying. I need God's help to help me to play hard. I want people to see how I play and to see God and God's influence in somebody's life. I want to do that because God has blessed me with this opportunity.
What this school represents for him, he wants to win here. It means a lot for him to win at BYU.
We were walking through the Marriott Center a couple games ago, and everybody was walking around, and it was exciting, you know, that pre-game excitement, and just thinking, oh, my dad would be so excited to be here.
He would be ear-to-ear grin and walking around as the proudest grandpa in the world.
Yeah.
He really would be. BYU and my grandson, put those together, there is no greater nirvana than that.
That's probably so true. He'd be so excited to be watching Richie. And then I thought, he probably is.
There's a lot of young fans that I see after games, and I want them to understand that if they want to play here and play college basketball, they can. If you're willing to just work and willing to sacrifice for your future, for your dreams, I really do believe that it's a possibility. Again, there's nothing crazy unique about me. I just had a dream, and I worked really hard for it over the course of 2 decades almost. You know, there's so many people around us that are there to help us. And that's my story, is I'm a result of a lot of incredible people around me that have carried me along and that have helped me to really believe that I can achieve my dreams.
From those early mornings in the church gym to the values he shaped with his grandfather, Richie followed a path rooted in faith and hard work, guided by a personal creed that ultimately shaped his game and life. He finished his junior season at BYU as first team All Big 12, and not surprisingly, we can't wait to see what he accomplishes next. BYU has an extensive roster of not only all-star players, but all-star coaches as well. Men's basketball assistant Tim Fanning shares how he segued from playing hoops to discovering a world of opportunity and possibility. From Spain to New Zealand to Israel, his journey is one of sacrifice, growth, and purpose, all eventually leading him to BYU. This is Deep Blue.
In high school, I remember very clearly the coach saying, like, you know, you're not going to make the team. And it was something that was, like, crushing. In terms of, like, just wanting something. And, you know, not getting it.
When somebody cuts you off, it's not easy. And it's probably one of the hardest moments that you live in your life. But after a while, when you settle down again and you just get back on focus, that's for sure a great motivation which is, I'm going to prove you wrong, which is, I'm going to prove me right. I can make it.
I was literally working as hard as I possibly could. Like, I was, you know, jumping rope for 30 minutes a day. I was waking up at 5 o'clock. I was doing ball handling drills. I was shooting by myself after practice, literally 500 shots a day. So I transferred schools and had a wonderful experience. Went and found a team, St. Mary's. I ended up being a role player on a state championship team that next year. And then that senior year, we moved up to the top division in California, and we played against a team that I got cut from. We won that game, and I started the game. I think I made 3 three-pointers in the first, 90 seconds. And it's just something that motivated me and continues to motivate me to go and chase my dreams.
What he wanted is, I want to live the dream of being in an NBA team and a EuroLeague team. I didn't make it as a player. Why not as a coach?
The two main routes for somebody that's not, you don't have in Spanish, enchufe. If you don't have any kind of in, you either start as a volunteer or you start as a grad assistant. I didn't really want to do either one of those things. I wanted to coach. I had an opportunity to go to Spain and be what I thought was going to be an assistant coach on an under 16 team. And then I showed up for the first practice and the sports director said, you're not going to be the assistant, you're going to be the head coach. And for me, this was wonderful because now it was an opportunity to put some of these things coming from all these different notebooks into practice.
He came to Spain where he didn't knew the language. He had to learn it almost here.
I knew I didn't want to coach a team in English, so I got the guys together and I just said, juntos, duros, positivos, which is together, tough, and be positive. That was a very impactful thing for me as a coach because my limited vocabulary required me to keep the message very clear. And I think that was something that still resonates with me today.
He's been always eager to learn from anyone who could just give him new experiences, new information, new knowledge, and that paid off.
He always on the run to prove everyone that he is deserve to be here, deserve to be there, and he does it with a lot of motivation.
6 years in Spain, 1 year in the G League, 3 years in New Zealand, including with the national team, 6 years in Israel in the Euro League level with Maccabi Tel Aviv, and 3 years back in the States.
That level of coaching that he was around, you know, worked for a lot of legendary European coaches, trying to gain knowledge from what he picked up over there was super interesting. And then because he was over there for so long, developed a lot of relationships with a lot of the basketball community over there. So that's really helped out in recruiting. I mean, he's a guy that you could literally drop him off in any country, really in the world, and he's going to know how to navigate it. He's going to know some basketball person. And because of that, we've been able to, get our hooks into a lot of different recruiting prospects all over the world.
If sometimes he has to take what for some people may seem like a step backward, he has to get the impulse forward in the next step that he's going to take, he doesn't hesitate to do it. He loves being in court. He loves helping players to grow. He loves improving. And that's all what matters for him. If he needs to do things that other people don't want to do because that helps him achieving his goals, he's going to do it.
I love just the stuff that he thinks about. I mean, it's unconventional, and it makes you sit back and man, I want to see this. How is this going to play out, right? You're talking about sacrifice. He's a guy that's sacrificed a lot to put himself in position to have these opportunities that he's had the last few years.
It's been a long journey, and it's been a lot of obstacles. I missed my best friend's wedding. But I'm pretty sure if I would have gone to it, I wouldn't have had a job because it was a tough moment in the season. Coaching overseas, can't just take off for 2 weeks. And the fact that I've made it to here, at this university is, I feel blessed. I really do. I feel like I'm on the right track and just to continue to chase it.
There are those coaches. We stepped into coaching because one dream was cut off. But when you start your coaching career, there's no limit. Limit is the sky. You just look above and there's no ceiling.
I just want to tell Tim thank you, because I honestly believe that without him that I would not be playing to this day. His energy and his coaching and his belief in me sparked an 11 plus, because I'm still ongoing, year career, and I've got to see so much and do so much and live my basketball dream.
What would you tell yourself that was just told you were going to be cut from the high school team?
Just keep going. The darkest moment of the night is right before the sunrise.
Tim's determination to chase his dream has led him to places, as you saw, all over the globe. With his substantial knowledge of basketball, he has made his impact felt at BYU and played a huge role in the team's journey to the Sweet 16 in the 2024-2025 season. We, again, can't wait to see how he impacts things in the approaching season. We'll revisit another coach in just a moment, but first, we go to the transfer portal. A UCI transfer specifically, Dawson Baker, shares his experience of how serving a mission for The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints shaped his life and gave him the determination to overcome anything, including injuries. This is Deep Blue.
As a kid growing up, Cota de Casa was a very nice place, but don't let that distract you from how we were raised as kids.
Driving into Cota, you could assume that people who live there might be a little entitled or spoiled because there's these giant mansions everywhere. But the Bakers are nothing like that.
A lot of Saturdays when we had a lot of neighbors who were out playing with their friends or sleeping in, we were waking up to the sound of a lawnmower, and we were working in the yard for several hours.
When we moved into this house, we put the yard in, and then we took care of the yard. So they learned that they either wanted to earn enough money to pay for a gardener or do it themselves.
You are hereby called to serve as a missionary of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. You are assigned labor in the Micronesia Guam mission.
When he got his call and was called to Micronesia Guam, we were very surprised.
Cota and Micronesia couldn't be further away on the sides of the spectrum.
I don't remember specific words from my setting apart. I just remember feeling so much confidence after the fact that no matter what was going to happen, that I was going to thrive.
He was thrilled, but when he got out to Guam, they assigned him a language and an island. And I think that's when he learned he would be learning a language for the first time. And I'm sure he felt overwhelmed.
The first 3 weeks I get there, it's already a struggle to try to pick up this language. I'm trying my best. My companion, who knows the language perfectly, he gets sick. And so they give me a new companion who's just a member, a local member of the church, a Chukis person. And the miracles that I saw on that part of my mission was just amazing.
It was more of a third world type country where he was eating foods he's never eaten before, sleeping on the floor rather than a cushion or a mattress.
Literally no running water, no electricity, no communication.
There was times where I probably should have been a little bit more scared than I was in the moment. I think in the moment you feel the armor of God as a missionary.
The mission was important to him, and it was just part of his life experience. But I don't think he had any idea the difference it was going to make in his life.
He came back such a different person.
Growing up, he was a great kid, and not that he wasn't humble to begin with, but it was just a unique experience that few people have that really changed the way that he looked at life, the way he looked at basketball, the way he looked at himself and his future.
I'm not surprised I made it through my mission despite the circumstances. I think going back to how my family raised me, I was very determined, very competitive, and very driven. And so those things taught me well going into a circumstance like my mission where you had to be comfortable with the uncomfortable.
We felt that his mission would be something that would be really beneficial to him and for us. I mean, being able to go and serve his mission for a couple years, grow up in terms of his experiences, but also physically and just become more of a man. We knew that there'd be a huge advantage to that. And knowing Dawson's competitive nature, we knew he was going to come back that much more hungry.
I think he surprised his coaches. He surprised me a little bit how quickly he came back and ended up starting after that first game. You know, he just did well. He did well. He ended up being the freshman conference player of the year, coming back from a mission, which was It's pretty unique, I think.
I chose the number one on my jersey at UCI because it's just a reminder that it was my only offer. And it kind of kept that chip on my shoulder that these other schools that I'm playing didn't care about me and they didn't think I was good enough to play there. Soon after that first year, the attention kind of came back to me that these other schools wanted, but I felt loyal to UCI, knowing that they kind of stuck with me. And so I spent the next 2 years there, having great years, being all conference. By the time my third year ended, I kind of knew that I just needed something different socially and as a basketball challenge. I knew that I wanted to kind of enter the transfer portal.
I was surprised after the first day, he got contacted by 20 schools.
BYU's visit was just like next level, like just the coolest thing ever, seeing all the facilities and being able to meet the guys on the team and stuff. And I wanted to make the decision to come to BYU. So when I first got to BYU, I was noticing a pain in my foot. The trainer at the BYU said, you know, let's go get a scan and see what it is, if it's anything. It turns out that I had a crack in my left foot that I need to get resolved. We thought it would be just enough time to have a surgery, put a rod in there and fix it.
The broken bone in his foot never healed, and it was always broken.
We had to get another surgery that kind of ended that season for me.
That was hard because of how competitive he is. He obviously wanted to, you know, come to BYU, do what he was planning on doing and make a difference and contribute to the team.
It was the season starting, so it was going to be a redshirt year for me, which was a total bummer because I knew the team that we had was great. Everyone was excited for the Big 12, and to not be as involved as I wanted was really hard for me.
So when I first got back over to BYU, one of the first things I was able to do was kind of his on-ramp back to the court program. So I was doing some one-on-one workouts with them, and he was frustrated in a sense where his conditioning wasn't the same, his shot wasn't the same. My conversations with him was like, this is a marathon, right? This isn't a race, right?
I don't think Dawson sat too much on a bench before. And so that's probably a very humbling experience. I think it also made him watch the team and think, where can I help? Where can I be, you know, useful? What can I add to this team? And it gave him a lot of time to find that player he wants to be for BYU.
Coming off an injury and not playing for a long time and then getting a coaching change, it's just a different challenge that I kind of wasn't expecting in my life or in my basketball career. But change has not been something new to me. My mission always felt like I was changing every single day. And this is just a different circumstance that I know I'm going to thrive in.
Been really happy with, you know, his progress on the court, kind of persevering through a lot of that. I think he's, you know, adapted to, you know, the things I'm asking him to do that might have been a little bit different than, you know, what he's done.
He's super hungry to get out there and play, to prove that he's healthy, to prove that he belongs at the Big 12 level. Just a beautiful overall kid that wants to please and wants to do what you ask.
I think he has a little bit of the competitive fire in him that he wants to show everybody what they missed last year.
He has things to prove and things he wants to do. And he will tell you when he's done. And he's not going to let the body dictate that or the mind. I think he's going to do it himself.
Because of all the things in my past, it's kind of made me who I am today.
As you see, an unexpected injury can have a very, very big impact, especially after just transferring to a brand new program. Dawson's faith and perseverance led him to playing in all 36 games in 2024-2025, averaging 7.5 points per contest. He recently re-upped and is back for his senior season at BYU to show off what other improvements he can make next season. Still on the way, another impactful assistant coach and a future NBA draft pick making waves. You're watching Deep Blue on BYU TV. Another welcome back to this Deep Blue men's basketball special on BYU TV. Similar to Dawson Baker, another transfer, this one from Rutgers University, Mawit Magg, the BYU forward, shares his journey to the Cougars and how it was filled, frankly, with danger and plenty of uncertainty. From Sudan to Australia and eventually to America, Mawit's resilience led to his outstanding ability and how he impacted this team. This is Deep Blue.
Me and my wife, all my family, we come from South Sudan.
Sudan was rocked by civil war for many years, and that led all the way to the separation of the country into two countries.
Life is still very much difficult for the everyday person. They just don't have access to the best education. A lot of the time, people are only having just a single meal because of the financial difficulties.
Many families moved out of the country and became refugees in neighboring countries in East Africa.
They say Australia is a very good country. It's very safe, good for a family. We fill the form and we go to interview and they approve us to come to Australia.
When they get to the West, and that's for the lucky ones, by the way, the lucky few that are able to get that, they want to sacrifice everything for their children. So then their children now become that generation, the next generation, that creates that kind of better chance for the family.
We decided to go back and visit, and the primary reason was because my mother wanted to go back and visit her family. We'd only been in the village for about a week.
During the night, one night, we got woken up around 2, 3 a.m. and told us to pack our bags, we gotta go.
And then sort of just flee for safety.
We got informed that the rebels are coming and they're not coming here to do anything pleasant. First time seeing AK-47 and seeing dead bodies on the ground, so it was pretty dramatic.
I was very much disappointed that, you know, after so many years of conflict and fighting that, you know, that there'd still be people out there that were still, they had the energy in them to want to still pick up a gun and fight. I just thought that, you know, at that point that the country had suffered enough. Like, why would you want to go back?
Approximately about two weeks or a week and a little bit that we're fleeing on feet and walking a lot. It was hot. We had to carry our luggage with us. And one time, I think it was during the nighttime in the evening, the guys were deciding whether if we should leave in during the nighttime or in the morning. And thankfully, we decided to leave at nighttime. And once we left and it was the morning, we got told and informed that the same place we were at the shore got raided by rebels. And it was very, you know, very emotional. I was very scared and frightened because I was young. But it's just an eye-opener and just a true testament to just to know that, you know, you just never know what's going to happen and tomorrow's never promised. And that day, moving forward, I just, you know, started to humble myself and try to be more appreciative of the things I have rather than complain that the things I don't have.
Going back home really did reinforce the fact that moving here to Australia, I was able to do so much more that I just would not have been possible had we stayed back in Sudan. Had we not decided to, you know, move up north for my parents to find work and then eventually come here, my life would have just been completely different.
Once I made it back to Australia, you know, I was very fortunate to start playing sports. You know, I was really tall. I was the tallest in my family and, you know, I'm a little copycat, so I copied my brother. And I see my brother attend this one team called Longhorns Basketball, coached by and the founder, by Coach Manyong.
And I said, "This is your little brother? I thought he was 16 and he was only 13. And I said, "Oh, he's on the team." I didn't even see him play. Physically, he was just built for the game.
Coach Manyong brought me to the side and just spoke to me and, you know, and presented an opportunity for me to go to the States. He's seen how I developed and how I was prevailing and getting better every day. And he thought that would be best if I wanted to play the highest levels or reach my goals was to go out to the States and compete over here.
To be honest, at the beginning, my parents were very much against the idea.
Yeah, very hard because we don't know anyone there. But Mawudbe decided to go there to play. So we say, okay.
A part of the problem was that they couldn't foresee it. But once Mawudbe was there in the US and they saw how focused he was, they couldn't have been more happier for him.
When he got his opportunity, he grabbed it with two hands and he worked hard in the United States, graduated from high school and was able to get a scholarship to go to college.
And once I got to Rutgers, I did my whole 4 years there. I graduated and then I decided to enter the transfer portal. I felt like it was just time for, you know, change of scenery.
You know, Mawudbe's story is one that's just the ultimate perseverance story. He's a guy who brings a ton of basketball experience, which is extremely trumped by his life experience.
Had to get on you guys a little bit, talking about you never know when we're going to need somebody, you never know what happens, and lo and behold, Richie goes down first play of the game. Mag comes in and plays his absolute freaking tail off, okay?
He
it's amazing. Like, he shows up every day with a smile on his face. But I don't know that everybody on our team even really understands the hardships that he's been through.
I'm sure, you know, wanting to provide for his family and create a future for himself, that's his drive. You know, that's his motivation.
I think he has not forgotten, though, where he comes from, and, you know, really wants to, I think, do proud for South Sudan and his African heritage.
You know, he gets up every morning. You know, he stays late at night. You know, works on his jump shot. You know, works on different aspects of his game because he wants to impact us in a positive way and, you know, set his future up.
He gets it from my parents. That, like, they work very hard, and I think he just, like, wants to be like them. Like, it's just that they've got us to this point, so it's up to us to now find our way.
Knowing my parents have sacrificed so much, it makes me feel grateful and a little bit special as well. I feel very special, especially knowing that they were parents who chose not to make the move.
Without them, this wouldn't be possible, and they did the best they could to give us, each one of us, an opportunity to have a better life and be successful. So shout out to my parents, you know, love them both, and yeah, thank you to them.
Yeah, keep going well, keep going, doing well. You finish uni and you keep going with the possible, and you got a good friend, got school, very good, you are happy with the school, and you got a friend, new friend, it's very good. We just told him, keep going, the same thing.
Mwit Mag is yet another inspiring example of overcoming struggles and how those struggles shaped his life to become a better person on and off the court. The Cougars, with Mwit Mag in the starting lineup, went 17-5, including an 8-game win streak to conclude Big 12 conference play. Mwit graduated in April, and we wish him the best of luck moving forward. One of the assistant basketball coaches that helped shape Mwit at BYU is John Linehan. In this Deep Blue, he returns to his hometown of Chester, Pennsylvania, where he recounts the specific moments that shaped him as he reconnects with the people who made differences in his life. He shares his story of how basketball gave him an escape and an outlet in this life. This is Deep Blue.
We are headed to the airport, heading out on a recruiting trip to the East Coast. If I get within a couple hours of Philadelphia, you know, I always try to get home and see my family, see my mom, you know, before I have to get out and get back to work. So it's always fun. So, you know, when we were driving in, you know, just thought about, you know, those days of early morning, you know, walking to practice. Chester is unique from the standpoint of, like, there are so many great things that are here, as well as so many not so good things, but combined the two, they build character and strength.
Well, when John was coming up, Chester was really drug infested, and playing basketball was like one of the ways out of the so-called, as they say, ghetto.
You know, I've seen a lot. You know, this kind of place makes you grow up a little faster than normal. You know, I grew up in the projects. I've seen, you know, someone get killed. You know, I've seen someone get shot right next to me. You know, it's a blessing that I'm even here today because it was that close.
But it was always the basketball courts that the kids could go to and to be able to get away from all the madness.
I mean, if you come from a city like Chester, you know, sports is your only way out. I mean, I didn't want to do drugs. I didn't want to do the other things that a lot of my friends and family members, you know, kind of took that route. That wasn't in my future at all. I don't think I've driven through here in probably 20, 30 years probably. But it was like right in the middle of the whole project was a big field. And the best basketball in Chester was played here. Some legends used to come right here and play. Wilt Chamberlain, I mean, Connie Hawkins, like all the big names would come here and play because Chester's a big basketball town. Bit of history, basketball history, right. Honestly, I mean, I never felt like I had a rough childhood, though. Like, I thought it was normal. But basketball gave me an outlet. It gave me something to strive for.
And he stuck to his craft, worked hard at it, was a gym rat, was in the gym constantly each and every day, always wanted to be in the gym and just work on his art. So that was a way for him to get out of here, and that's what he did.
When I was coming out of high school, I didn't have many or a lot of high-level scholarship opportunities to go to college and play basketball. So I signed a letter of intent to go to Howard University.
Left that morning, he was all packed. We said our little goodbyes.
I know he didn't want to really go because John, he played with Kobe, he played against the best guards in the country. He did his thing on all of those players. They knew who he was. He felt some kind of way that he was going to have to go to Howard University.
Now, I wasn't as excited about this step as I should have been, you know, so we set out in the parking lot, missed the 10 o'clock train, then the 11 o'clock train, then the 12 o'clock train. Then my dad said, look,
life is what you make it. So, you know, it's up to you. If this is not something that you want to do, I'm behind you 100%. Don't worry about anybody else. You know, it's right now, it's what John wants. If you want to go to Howard, then you get out the car, we're going to walk you to there, and, you know, you get on that train and go to Howard. But if you don't, this is the time to say it.
I kind of felt that in my stomach, in my heart, that it wasn't the right choice. You know, so that's why I took that, you know, leap of faith and decided to bet on myself. When I came back in the house, you know, my mother was beet red, tears in her eyes, and, you know, she stormed up the stairs and looked back and said, you guys better know what you're doing.
I couldn't see straight. I was just so upset. I'm like, who turns down a scholarship? Time went on, it worked out. He was recruited over, and he ended up at Providence College.
No, but at this train station some 30 years ago, I made a choice that changed my life.
When you look at John, you see a guy that doesn't have the prototype of a regular basketball player. He's just an average-sized guy. So for the underdogs that we have so many here in Chester, to see someone like John who had the skills, had the talent, but not the size, but the heart to be the icon that he has been in Europe is just fabulous. So it's just a great story all around. I can't say it enough. Super proud of him and what he represents to us here.
It all comes back to Chester, man. Yeah. You know, remember the old sign that they used to have on the east side?
What Chester makes Chester?
Chester. What Chester makes Chester.
that's a classic that will never die.
Never die.
Yeah, well, you got a lot to share, man. For you to have been able to push through those barriers and not let none of them things get in your way. And you are a testament, bro, like, to the possibilities, man.
So what we have here, this is Chester High School homecoming. This is a big event. See my family, friends, and just, you know, touch my city again. So I love it. I love it.
You can see what John means to a lot of people. Everyone he saw wanted to hug him, shake his hand, rub his head or whatever. They're just so proud of him.
You know, when I was 17, I never thought I would be a coach, let alone at BYU. I mean, this is an unbelievable opportunity, but I try to just live and lead with a good heart. Always be mindful of people that are behind me, my mother, my father, my brother, my sisters, my family, you know, my city. You know, I represent them all on my chest. There are a lot of people that sacrifice and pave the way to help me be where I am today.
You want to talk about resilience? John Linehan exemplifies that, and he played a major impact in helping BYU get to just their third Sweet 16 in 45 years. He and the staff played a huge role in getting guys like Yegor Demin to trust BYU, choose BYU, and also play a role in getting BYU to the Sweet 16. In fact, Yegor had to leave his family in Russia at 15 to play for Real Madrid, and then eventually was recruited by Kevin Young and John Linehan and staff to BYU. Yegor not only learned better skills on the court, but ultimately to trust in God's timing. Let's go deep blue.
Yegor, take one. Born in Moscow,
In the city where I grew up, summer is hot, winter is cold, and people are like, oh, for real? And you're not even riding beers? Like, I'm saying, no, not really. Some people do, but not me. When I was 15, I got offered by Real Madrid, which is one of the best European clubs. This is so unique for my country. And I was the first Russian player ever in a yacht team of Real Madrid.
Relocating to Spain at 15, you know, by himself, you probably forced him to grow up a little faster than most of us. You know, I was eating mom's dinner every night at 15, and so he's kind of on his own.
It was hard to take this fact that I'm not gonna see my parents every day as I did last 15 years. That I'm not gonna come back home and see a dinner on the table that my mom cooked. Just the fact that I needed to go somewhere really far from my family, it was really nervous for me. I was a little bit scared of this. At the same time, it would be really weird if I would just say, I'm scared, I don't want to go. So we took a risk.
Тогда ты в любой ситуации, в любой жизненном пути бескорыстно, если ты его любишь, да, ты подставляешь ему плечо всегда. Если это его мечты, на пути к его мечте, да, подставляешь свое плечо и вообще не задумываешься, как это будет там в итоге. Ты просто следуешь с ним в ногу и пытаешься, ну, как бы жить его жизнью.
Мы постоянно были на связи, он звонил практически каждый день, иногда могли по два раза созвониться, он был постоянно... делился своими новостями, и мы знаем Егора, и я бы сразу по голосу почувствовал, что у него какие-то неприятности или там какой-то страх или неплохое настроение, да, то есть мы...
I started being really close to God when I went to Spain. I got kind of alone, really separated from my family, and there was, God was a way for me to get rid of bad thoughts, you know, being sad, being emotional. God was the only person I could talk my language.
The way we communicate was like we had our translator running all the time, or just like show me the hands all you wanted. But like long conversations, he would just say yes, and that yes was like he didn't understand it.
I basically learned English because of him, because this guy would just like teach me every day new words. I would ask him a lot of questions, and it was really hard for him to live with me and just trying to understand what I'm saying and trying to explain what he wants to say to me. So yeah, Declan, my friend, he's just awesome.
After he learned English, he had to learn Spanish also. It was a bit difficult for him, but like I tried to help him. So we mixed like the English words and the Spanish words like in a sentence. And we call it Spanglish.
When you leave your home country of Russia and go play, you know, at Real Madrid in Spain at a young age, it says a lot to everybody of how important the game of basketball is, but also how dedicated you are to becoming the best basketball player you can be.
BYU is a huge step for me. It's a little different if we're comparing it with Real Madrid, because Real Madrid was more a step of maturing and getting to the next level. So here, I just feel like it's the best place for me to be focused on right things and learn how to be a better person than I am now.
You know, Yegor's whole mindset was like, no, I want to go to college basketball. I want to play against the best American style of basketball to prepare myself better for the NBA.
We're talking about one of the highest rated recruits in BYU history. I mean, he comes in with a lot of fanfare and has really lived up to it. You know, he's a tremendous player. I think we're all excited to see what he will do once the big lights get turned on. But he also has a maturity that he brings that you wouldn't expect.
You wouldn't know that there's a, you know, this status of being a future lottery pick is around him. You know, he doesn't act, that type of way. He's just there to get better and be a good teammate and, and, you know, be a friend to everybody.
I think he's really focused on just coming in every day and trying to bring his best version. And again, you know, he's coming to a new country, new basketball from FIBA to college, and there's challenges with that. And he seems very, very focused, you know, and ready for those challenges.
У него для него не было никаких ни поблажек, никакого себе он не давал послабления. Вот это его, вот я считаю, что это его одно из самых больших достижений, что он своим трудом прям проторил себе дорогу к своей цели.
Помимо большой цели должны быть еще короткие микроцели, потому что это делает его ближе к его мечте.
God has his own timing for us, and I believe that he has a plan for me, and he has his own timing for me. That's what makes me not being nervous about the result right now. Probably I'm not even going to notice it, but I'm getting better step by step.
Я хочу, чтобы моя семья и моя страна гордились мной. I want my family and my country to be proud of me.
Yegor Demin's lone season at BYU was straight up unforgettable and punctuated by a trip to the Sweet 16. After that Sweet 16 game in New Jersey, Yegor told me that BYU felt like home, not just because it made him a great basketball player, but because, in Yegor's words, it taught him how to be a man. And we can't wait to see what that man does as he pushes into an NBA career. As we close out, a reminder to watch more inspirational stories like the ones we saw and heard tonight by visiting byutv.org/deepblue. Our thanks to Richie Saunders, Tim Fanning, Dawson Baker, Mawit Mag, John Linehan, and Yegor Demin for sharing their stories. And thank you, as always, for joining us on this Deep Blue special. For all of our outstanding crew here at BYU TV, I'm Spencer Linton. See you next time.